I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is Kevin Fossen, and he is the park ranger at Three Island Crossing State Park in South Idaho. Peter, have you ever been to Three Island Crossing State Park?
No, not one bit.
After today, you're going to want to go there.
I probably will,
okay,
yeah.
So we live in Pocatello. Very often, we have to drive out to Boise. It's about a three and a bit to get over to Boise. And my favorite part of the drive, there are a few interesting points along that drive, but my favorite is definitely once you get to Glen's Ferry and the road drops down and then you come back up. Mm-hmm. And I like rocks. And I like rivers, and you see rivers and rocks out there, and it's absolutely beautiful, gorgeous. At the bottom, right there in Glen's Ferry, is where you'd find Three Island Crossing State Park. I love the park. We're going to talk with Kevin all about it. But before we get there, I bet you got some nature news.
Yeah. So, Leif, MIT engineers have built a tennis table robot.
No.
Yes, they have. That can quickly estimate the speed and trajectory of an incoming ping pong ball and execute one of several return swings.
Wait a second.
The loop, the drive, or the chop to precisely hit to a desired location on the table, including the various types of spins on that ping pong.
They've made a real live robot pong machine?
Yes, they have.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so the engineers, they threw 150 ping pong balls at the robot, and the return hit rate was sitting around 88% success.
That's better than me.
Yes. You know, the hope is not to have an Olympic gold medal robot tennis player, but to improve the speed and responses of humanoid robots in scenarios where a robot has to carry out dynamic maneuvers and plan where its end effect will meet an object, you know, such as search and rescue and some other high intense
scenarios. That's impressive to think about. Anybody who's, you know, played ping pong or something like that can appreciate there's not a lot of time to make all of those decisions, those calculations. And that's like as you get better at playing ping pong, you get good at reading the spin and the path of the ball so that you know where to hit from and how to counter the spin and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
And so this is an electronic robot that just can do it on its own.
On its own. And so they've, you know, when I was reading through it, they've got multiple cameras set up on the table.
Right on.
And you got all these programs and algorithms for it to decide real quick about it. It's not as fast as our Olympic ping pong players.
Sure.
But it's faster than the average ping pong player.
That's pretty impressive. So I'm imagining a day not too far in the future where we have the robotic Olympics. I bet maybe there is a robotic Olympics and we could have two robots going at it ping pong style.
Yeah, I'm glad that you went to some really happy future scenarios. I went straight to Skynet and Terminator. So
you went to the dystopian.
Absolutely.
And I was thinking of just happy pong playing robots.
Yeah.
Half glass full, half glass empty or whatever.
Right, totally.
That's awesome. Well, today's trivia question deals with our state parks. What year did Three Island Crossing State Park become a park? When we come back from the break, Kevin Fossen from that park will join us, and we're going to learn a whole lot about that part of the world. So stay tuned. Join us after the break.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org. Or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command, Play KISU.
Hey, welcome back from the break. Our guest today is Kevin Fossen. He is the park ranger at Three Island Crossing State Park. First off, welcome to the Nature of Idaho.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. Hey, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
So I am a park ranger here at Three Island Crossing and do a little bit of everything. Educate kids, fix things when they break. You're kind of a jack of all trades, you know, kind of guy. Carpentry, plumbing fixes. Something goes wrong in the park, we're the guys that have to go out and fix it.
Do you need a ping pong robot?
Ping pong robots would probably be a hit with the kids. I'm sure.
Right, you know, right.
We'll look into
how
it.
How many of them could challenge the robot? Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. So, Kevin, how did you become a park ranger? Did you just wake up one day and decide I want to be a park ranger?
Who doesn't want to be a park ranger?
It right. comes with a hat.
Yeah. I mean, that's my goal. I want to be able to retire and then become a seasonal park ranger. So, you know.
For myself, I always thought about getting into forestry or, parks, something along those lines, and feel very fortunate that I started here on the maintenance crew and worked through a season and was fortunate enough to become a ranger in August of 2023. Been doing it since then. Love the job. I get to work outside every day in, how beautiful it is when you drive through
and yeah.
you see your favorite part of your trip that you're headed to Boise. You got to come in here and see the park because there's nothing. You can drive past it. Everybody drives past it on I-84. But once you actually get in here and see the park for itself, it's beautiful. And we've got lots of activities to do, hiking, fishing, kayaking out in the river. We've got currently 82 campsites. We have 8 cabins, a beautiful history center here, the Oregon Trail History and Education Center. That is a must see. Our exhibits are phenomenal.
Yeah, I want to break that. I want to break that down. And one of the things you said it right there. The freeway, the interstate is right near you. It's a couple miles away, and I think for most people traveling along that road gets a lot of traffic, and people whiz by and not realize. You're looking out the window and you see the river and you see the landscape, and it's very beautiful. But I think a lot of folks, and me included, for, a good 15 or so years, kept driving by that and never pulled off the road down to Glen's Ferry. And there was one year where I decided, let's just check out what's down there. And I did and started touring around a little bit and realized, there's so much that you can see if you just pull off the big interstate, slow down a little bit, and go exploring. So I stumbled on your park maybe 5 years. It was just after COVID, actually. It was in 21, and had a chance to stay in one of your cabins. It was early in the season, and stayed in one of the cabins and really enjoyed a couple nights there. It was really, really nice as a departure point to go visit the region, because there's lots in the region as well as your park. So let's start at your park. You're mentioning there's cabins, there's RV, there's tent sites, and that sort of thing. You're right there on Snake River.
We are right on the Snake River. So 5 of our cabins overlook the river. We have an upper campground loop with 43 sites in it. One of them is a camp host site. So technically 42, but 43 are up there.
Right.
We've got bathroom facilities all over. One in the upper loop, one in the lower loop, and one down in our day use area. Another fun thing we have is our 18-hole disc golf course that a lot of people don't know about. Like you said, you're whizzing by at 80 miles an hour on the freeway. You got to stop and slow down, come into the park, fishing. I think I already mentioned that.
Yeah.
Plenty of hiking trails, wildlife galore. If you want to see some mule deer, they're almost always here in the park. You can find them everywhere.
Right. It's a lovely spot. So why was the park started there? So Three Island Crossing.
So the Three Island Crossing is one of the most famous crossings on the Oregon Trail. It played a significant role in exploration and settlement of Western America. When the immigrants came across, they had a decision to make. Do we cross here at the dangerous, treacherous crossing? Cross over to the north side. You've got more opportunity for fresh water and food for your animals. And if you made the crossing, it cut about 3 to 4 days off of your trip to Fort Boise. If you stayed on the south side, it was hot, dry, treacherous. It was a longer trip. So you had to decide whether you wanted to make the trip or not. If you did decide to make the trip and you didn't actually make it all the way across the river, you lost livestock or your goods, your wagon may tip over. So it was a pretty significant spot in shortening the trip out west.
And the crossing was designated there because the river is narrowest there, or it's, or the flow is slowest, or there must have been some geographic reason to pick that point.
So I think a lot was the Native Americans that were here knew where to cross.
Right.
It was, they lived here. Funny story, out of the three islands, they actually only used 2.
Oh, okay.
They'd cross over to the first one, cross to the middle one, head back upriver to the, it comes to a point. Then they actually had to angle upriver from that island to the shore they didn't use the third island. It was too deep, too treacherous and swift. So even though it's a three island crossing, they actually only used two.
So how wide was this crossing?
I'd say it's a couple hundred yards, but it's, you know, it's broke apart because you're using two of the three islands. And they got help from the Native Americans that were here. Usually it was the younger, like teenage boys. Most immigrants didn't know how to swim back then. Hmm. It wasn't swimming is something we all think we could, you know, kind of take for granted now that everybody knows how to swim. Back then, not everybody did. So they got a lot of help from the locals that, you know, were here.
I noticed that there's at least the workings of, I guess, a modern sort of a ferry kind of crossing that is that people can see down lower.
So that was a replica, and they used to use it just, you know, as show in the location you see it at now. But the actual ferry that Gus Glenn built and constructed was about 2 miles upstream, and that was in 1869. He actually built it to help his freight company move freight from Utah to Fort Boise.
Yeah, and I can imagine that would have been a pretty well-traveled, highly trafficked, important crossing. And so it's kind of, to me, it's interesting that we have this parallel of that crossing point being historically significant for as a conduit to move westward across the state. And right adjacent to it, we have the interstate today, right? And so
that nobody stops at Three Island Crossing anymore. Because, right?
Kind of along the same path, but yeah, it's people need to stop. It's beautiful here.
So when people pull off the road, and I'm determined to encourage people to get off the road and stop in Glenn's Ferry, pull off in Glenn's Ferry. And then from there, it's, I don't know, maybe not even 5 minutes to get to your state park from there. But what's in that region? Like when you get down in that valley of, where Glenn's Ferry is, what can people, you know, explore if they get down that way?
You know, the main thing coming through is the Snake River. Just historically, there's a lot of the Oregon Trail around us. So not only just in our park, but on the other side of the I-84, you can still see the wagon ruts. So we've got maps and directions for visitors on how to get to there. You can still see them to this day. You can see on the south side of our park, we actually have an overview. So it's a nice drive to, you get on the other side, and you can actually look down on the three islands at that point.
So how about this? What would be the first thing you do if you were a guest?
If I was a guest, and the first thing I would do, just getting off, like you said, that busy, fast freeway, I would drive down to our day use area, and I would just get out of my car, walk out into the grass, and just look around. Because you've got the cliffs on one side, you've got the river right in front of you, you're surrounded by trees and wildlife. It's just beautiful. And it, the go, go, go of the freeway, if you can get off and then just stop for a while, you'll feel this calmness and the peacefulness just come over you just by the beauty of the surrounding area.
Yeah, and even though it's close by to the freeway, you lose the freeway pretty quickly once you get down into the park, like you said, in the day use area, have a walk around, you start hearing the birds, you hear the flow of the river. I was out there a few weeks ago, and you could hear the fish jumping, and the muleys were coming in too. And you're immediately transported away, and you're not in the concrete anymore.
Exactly.
It's remarkable how close you are, but how far away you feel.
Yeah, it transforms you. You know, it takes you away from all that hustle and bustle, and instantly you're where you want to be.
So is the park open year round? And how do the seasons affect the park and what you see and what some of the activities you can participate in?
So the park is open year round, 7 days a week. We do shut down our lower campground loop because it gets so cold around here. We've got to shut off all the water. Pipes will freeze. You'll see a lot more of the deer in the winter than you will in the summer, especially down if you hike through our lower loop. Even though it's closed for camping. You're still welcome to walk down there, take a hike, go through, and it kind of becomes a little wildlife refuge down in there. So in between that loop and the river and our neighbors, the deer just congregate in there. You'll see them swim across the river at times. And it's just beautiful.
That's nice. Now, in terms of camping, the camp season starts when and ends when, approximately?
So you can camp all year round.
Oh, really? Okay.
So you can camp all year round, but we do shut off the water to the campsites.
Yeah.
We have the bathrooms down in our day use area stay open year round. They're heated. So those are the only ones that stay open year round. We do have one small one that's connected to our old visitor center. And that one just recently got remodeled. So it'll stay open all year as well.
Yeah. And it seems like your shoulder seasons are a little longer than what I'm used to, certainly up in the Pocatello area where we're higher elevation. You guys are a little lower. And so it seems like your spring comes a little sooner and your winter a little later than us out here in the Far East.
Yeah. And we sit kind of in a little bowl. And so a lot of weather goes around us almost. Mm-hmm. Like we will get some snow, but, you know, 15 miles east or 15 miles west, they'll get dumped on and we're looking around like, no, we're fine. We don't, you know, we don't have a lot of snow right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's nice. We do get cold, but our winters are pretty mild as far as precipitation goes.
What's your night sky like?
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's we run a few times a year throughout the summer. We'll do a dark sky or a night sky program. And it's put on by Dr. Chuck Schroll. He comes out, he's part of the National Park Service. And a few times a year, he'll come in. They usually start around 9:30 at night. But it's a really good program and you learn quite a bit. We get repeat people coming out because you'll keep learning something new each time you do.
And the great part is you can stay up all night because you're camping there. You don't have to go home. You get to stay.
Yeah, just sit in your chair and just watch the stars, you know, look for shooting stars when the meteor showers are happening. But yeah, it's pretty dark when the lights go out here. So the stars, as long as the moon's not out and bright, you see all the stars.
So do you guys have other programming and events throughout the year there?
We do a lot of junior ranger programs. So we'll do some like what we call pop-up booths throughout the campground. And we'll go around and just set up a table and throw, you know, we put a presentation together and put it on there. And generally it's the junior ranger programs, you know, are for the younger audience, but it's just the educational thing. We like to do a tree cookie program, teach the kids about trees. So trees that have had to come down for one reason or another, we'll cut a slice out of them and it allows the kids to kind of, you know, count the rings on the tree. They can see how old it is and it's hands-on for them and kind of, you know, you watch their eyes kind of light up. And, oh, this tree is the same age as I am. It's a lot of fun.
That's great.
I was going to ask, do you have them like a junior ranger fix a fence program?
we could use one of those, but we mend some fences on our south side property. So we could have used some help there.
That's great. Now, I should also point out that your neighbors, you mentioned your neighbors, some of our listeners will really appreciate this, that you are located next to a vineyard.
We are. We are located next to Why Not Winery.
Yes. Which also, not only do they have a vineyard and they have golf, I think they have a golf course next to them, right?
They have a golf course, yep.
Yep. And they have a restaurant there. And so there's kind of lots of like additional fun things that that folks can enjoy while they're down in the area.
Oh yeah. We have trails that lead from the park right over to the winery. It's kind of, you know, they're our neighbors and we share some property together. So take the trail right up to the winery and you'll see people in here in golf carts with all their golf stuff headed over. We've got a theater that was built in 1914. The architect is the same that built or designed the Capitol building.
Oh, really?
And so it's fun. We don't have a movie theater, but we have live theater in town here.
That's great.
That's another fun attraction to go see when the plays are happening.
And then you have an interpretive center there.
Yes. Our interpretive center is the Oregon Trail History and Education Center. Open 9 to 4 daily. Currently during the winter, our hours obviously reduce. Staffed by volunteers generally. And it's an amazing self-guided tour. You go through lots of interactive displays, artifacts, a lot of really neat information. I don't know. It's hands-on. So most of the times when you go into a place, you're not allowed to touch anything. And we encourage people, hey, if you see a handle, see if that thing opens. You know, there's a little trap there that, you know, it's the stick and the rock, you know, that old thing. You pull that out, you listen to it clunk. And so it's not completely hands off. There are, you know, some things that we ask not to touch, but for the most part, it's nice to be able to go into some place and encourage kids to actually touch things.
Yeah, I'm just thinking at the beginning of our discussion, talking about crossing the Snake River, and if you were able to cross and go on the north side, you shortened your trip to Fort Boise by 3 days. Nobody thinks about going to Boise and taking 3 days now. You know, what is it, 3 hours from Pocatello? Right. And so I just think of going through and learning about the Oregon Trail and just understanding how long this journey actually took everyone.
Right.
It kind of puts things in perspective. Yeah, I'm still fascinated that, yeah, we don't even think about crossing rivers anymore. We just drive over the bridge. Yeah.
Exactly. Drive over the bridge. You know, I paddle across it in my kayak. That's about the only crossing I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, going along with that theme of like trying to slow people down a little bit and appreciate, you know, the nature and the environments that we're passing through as we're going from point A to point B. You know, again, Glens Ferry is a great place to do that. I'd love to know, you know, from your perspective, Kevin, like, what's an ideal day spent at the park?
An ideal day for me?
Yeah.
Getting up, having breakfast. Because I drive through every morning and I smell the pancakes, the bacon, oh, yeah, the sausage, you know, you smell the coffee every morning, makes you hungry, whether you've had breakfast or not. So, you know, get up, have breakfast on a nice, crisp, cool morning, take a little hike. Once it starts to warm up, grab a kayak, a paddleboard, something like that. You can go down to our day use area and there's some access points where you could actually get in the water there, paddle around at a slow pace. Because, you know, the river's not flowing super fast, but the slower that you go, the more you see.
Right.
Take time to soak it all in. Head back to your camp. You know, you're going to fire up lunch, or if you've been out long enough, dinner, depending on how long you've been away. Nice little campfire, you know, to end the day. Once that kind of settled down, look up at the sky. Mm-hmm. Just watch the stars.
Yeah.
So for me, that would be the perfect day. Get a little bit of, you know, get a little bit of hiking in, get a little bit of water in, get to watch the stars at night, enjoy a campfire, because, you know, what else are you here to do? Relax. And that's the small town of Glens Ferry it's an easy, relaxing lifestyle.
Right.
And I have everything you want, but it has everything you need.
Right. And I would say take your earbuds out, too, so hear the things around you.
Oh, yeah. Leave the phone in your campsite. You don't need it. All that stuff and all your electronics and your technology. I know we're using it now and it's great. But for a day of camping, yeah, leave it in your tent or your trailer, whatever you have.
Well, that's just it, right? Like you want the full experience, the full sensory experience of being out there. You can smell it, you can taste it, you can hear it, and you feel it under your feet or in your hands as you're immersed. I mean, it's a really immersive place. I really love the environment that you guys have set up there. It's really, it's very simple, but effective at what it does. So I applaud that place. So a question, you know, I'm really curious about, you guys are a state park. I'll ask the trivia question a little later about, you know, when it became a state park. But what goes into, like, some places are state parks, and I guess how do they even become a state park in the first place?
Well, I know some properties or some parks were donated to the state.
Okay.
And the people that donated them give it to them, you know, with the understanding that this will always be open to the people.
Right.
And a lot of parks, you know, nationwide or worldwide have become that way. It's like, you can have this property as long as everybody always gets to enjoy it. Keep it open for the people.
Do you know, I mean, are there like a lot of parks that are being created, or is there like a newest park in Idaho that you know of?
Land of the Yankee Fork took over Chalice Springs.
Okay.
That's the most recent. Or Chalice Hot Springs. I'm sorry.
Right.
And that's the most recent one that was acquired. Some property is not owned by the state or, you know, Idaho Department of Parks and Rec, but it's run by us. Maybe owned by IDL, or I think that's right.
Sure.
Or BLM.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yep.
So
yep.
There's partnerships with a federal agency, state agency partnership kind of thing.
Yep. Even the Army Corps of Engineers. You know, we'll run some states on their property. Oh, and fish and game sites as well.
Right.
Manage some of those.
Excellent. Well, and we're grateful that there are the state parks, and we encourage people to go visit and support them. I mean, they're there to be enjoyed, and it's a great way to experience our amazing state and the diversity of our environments in our state.
Yeah, the parks are amazing, and each state park you go to is going to be, you'll feel like you're almost in a completely different world from the one before. So that's kind of another fun thing is, you know, hit a couple in one day if you can, you know, compare them out.
Well, I mean, the whole state of Idaho is the land of variety. You know, wherever you go, there's something different.
Yeah, everybody knows this whole state's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
We're just a little tiny portion, but you know, we're a beautiful little portion.
But you right. are, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Kevin, so what year did Three Island Crossing become a state park?
Three Island Crossing State Park became a park in 1971.
71. That's quite a ways ago.
Not that long.
A little bit older than I am.
Yeah, not that long ago. Come on now. So... Awesome. Thank you so much, Kevin, for joining us today to talk about Three Island Crossing State Park. And for everyone who happens to be traveling along 84, please stop by and check it out. And before you go, just get a little bit of extra information on parkandrec.idaho.gov. And again, thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, guys.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org, from Spotify or other select podcast services, or from KISU's mobile app. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.